Lucky Strike Green has gone to war.
It's half past eight.
It's half past eight New York time. Time to wake up America and stuff the experts.
Lucky Strike Green has gone to war.
Each week at this time, Lucky Strike gives you a chance to test your wits against those of four super wits. You provide the questions and our experts try to answer them. Remember, for every question used, Lucky Strike will give you not only $10 in war stamps, but a set of the 12-volume Britannica Junior Encyclopedia. If the question is muff, you get the Junior Britannica, plus a $50 war bond, plus a 24-volume set of the regular Encyclopedia Britannica. Send your questions to Information Please, 480 Lexington Avenue, New York City. If our editorial staff edits your questions a bit, don't fret over it. In case of similarity, we'll have to be sole judge of who shall be paid. And all questions become the property of Information Please.
Lucky Strike Green has gone to war.
And now light up a Lucky Strike as I present our master of ceremonies, book reviewer of the New Yorker magazine, Clifton Fadiman. Mr. Fadiman.
Thank you, Mr. Strong. Ladies and gentlemen, Information Please continues on its spontaneous and unrehearsed way. And our board of experts tonight is made up of our regular trio, Mr. Adams, Mr. Bavant, and Mr. Kieran. And as our guest, the military editor of the New York Times, Mr. Hanson W. Baldwin. We're going to begin tonight with a question from Mrs. J. E. Wignott of Rochester, New Hampshire. What bride or sweetheart, it's an odd distinction we make on this show, what bride or sweetheart of literature, the stage, or screen was fatally injured in an air raid while in an automobile? We have three hands. Mr. Baldwin?
Mrs. Miniver.
What
is it? Novel about Mrs. Miniver.
Mrs. Miniver's daughter.
Yeah,
daughter-in-law.
Daughter-in-law.
Daughter-in-law,
yes. That's exactly right. It wasn't in the original book, as I remember, but...
It's in the screen.
It is in the screen version. Yes, quite right. Now, what bride or sweetheart was killed by a cold sea wind? Killed by a Mr. Kieran.
Annabel Lee.
Annabel Lee is right. Who was Annabel Lee?
The lady that Edgar Allan Poe wrote about.
Sorry. You remember the lines in which he killed her off?
Cold sea wind came out of the sea, chilling and killing.
Annabelle. Mr. Levant?
My lines are different. Who's wonderful? Who's marvelous? Miss Annabel Lee? That isn't the one.
comic bird. And what bride or sweetheart committed suicide after a plot to save her sweetheart failed? Mr. Levant.
That's Tosca.
It is Tosca. Yes. What's the story? Can you remember?
I remember.
Vaguely?
Sure. Scotty, the policeman. They have the prefect, whatever they call him.
Yeah.
He's trying to get at Lord Tosca, Lord Tosca as he knew her.
Yeah.
And she was shielding her fella, who was a painter, who was shielding another fella. And,
You got more relative clauses.
We're in the first act now. What you want is the third act.
What happened?
Well, in the third act, they make a bargain, and then she plunges a knife into, usually Lawrence Tibbett when he's in voice. And then he's ordered to be killed, the painter, with false bullets. However, the bullets aren't false. And after he's killed, Kevin DeRossi or something like that.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, a union man.
Mm-hmm.
And then she plunges from something high.
Yeah.
Parapet. As a protest. What she got out of that,
I don't know. You know, you make it sound better than it plays, Mr. Levant. Really. Well, that's three out of three. And sends us on to a question from Paul J. Crowley of Rochester, New York. This is a military question, gentlemen. We have to get two out of three. Name the Axis commander in Africa when Wavell was the winner. Now, you have to go back. Remember when Wavell was going ahead? Who was the Axis commander, Mr. Levant?
Graziani.
Graziani is right. Mr. Baldwin, that's correct, is it not?
Electric Whiskers.
With Bergenzoli.
That was Gorgonzola. Yes.
Bergenzoli.
Yeah. Whatever happened to Electric Whiskers, Mr. Baldwin?
Captured.
Who's got him?
The opera. He's in the opera, I think.
He's in the opera?
Well, the English show him Verdi, I read, all the time. He likes to hear
opera. He loves that, huh? How about this? Who was the British field commander of the 8th Army at the time when Rommel made his furthest advance into Egypt? Mr. Baldwin.
Ritchie. Neil, yes. Nephew, and Ritchie.
That's exactly right. And did he operate under the orders of another commander?
That is right. He operated under the orders of General Auchinleck.
General Auchinleck. That's right. That gives us the story complete. Now, finally, name the German tank commander who was captured in the present campaign. Mr. Baldwin?
Rotha.
How do you say it?
R-O-T-H-A.
Has anybody got another idea, Mr. Buren?
I thought General Stilmer.
No, he was killed.
Someone was killed.
The one who it was had dinner with General Montgomery last night, he said on the radio.
They like each other?
Yeah, they had good food and they diagrammed the whole thing.
Well, what was his name?
The man who pronounced it on the air had very bad diction.
Ripper von Poma.
Poma!
Yeah,
that's the one you were thinking of, Mr. Baldwin.
Not exactly.
He was captured in the present campaign. Well, as long as we're on this campaign, which is making all of us very happy at the moment, Mr. Baldwin, could you tell us off the record how the British strategy in this campaign differs from that of the previous ones in Libya and Egypt?
Air power, principally. They've been hammering at the German lines for weeks now and have practically prevented Rommel from getting gasoline and supplies and tanks. And that is the primary cause, I think, of his great defeat.
Would there be any secondary causes that you can analyze for us?
Secondary causes are the great British superiority in tank strength and also in manpower and air strength.
Yeah.
And I think the 8th Army of today is the best army the British have ever put in the field.
That sounds as if you're pretty optimistic about how they're going to wipe the Germans up during the next few days. Would you care to make any predictions?
Not yet. I don't think Rommel is eliminated yet. I think we have to see in the next 3 or 4 days what happens. He still has 3 of his tank divisions pretty closely bunched around Mers and Matruh, has a screen out behind him to protect his rear. He's trying to retire in order, and the Germans are already attempting to fly reinforcements to him.
Yeah, you'd rather not commit yourself, then, to the outcome.
No, not yet.
Mr. Kieran, do you see how to become a military expert? Mr. Levant?
I say all you do is depress everybody.
No, I think we don't feel very depressed, and neither does Mr. Baldwin about the campaign in Egypt. How about this one from Julia Degnan of Jamaica, New York? Now, this is a musical question, gentlemen, but it's one on which Mr. Baldwin should establish himself as a master. A member of which branch of our armed forces might issue an invitation to his date with this music? There are going to be 3 pieces played, and we have to get 2 out of 3. Let's have the first. Mr. Kieran.
Member of the Flying Force. American Air Force.
American Air Force. Okay. What was being played?
Come, Josephine, and your flying machine away.
You go.
Hey, no, Oscar, I've never heard you before. So.
That's a song I knew when I was a kid. Yesterday.
Now the second one.
I'm not sure. Is that about a park?
Keep going.
Petting in a park?
Who's stopping you?
Well,
sounds like the Navy to me.
Attaboy, Mr. Baldwin. The Navy. Not that the Army and the Marines couldn't...
No, they'd hold
it. Sure, you've got to be fair. But I think mainly the Navy, yes, who have a predilection for parks and for parking. Mm-hmm. Now, how about the third and last? Mr. Levant again.
Jangle, jingle, jungle, jingle.
Ah.
Jingle, jangle. Well, the cavalry.
The cavalry, yes.
Or a Cossack, for that matter.
Or a Cossack. They're most of them are cavalrymen. Well, that gives us 3 out of 3 and sends us on to a question from Mrs. Eva Betterly of Rockville, Connecticut. Now, gentlemen, I'm going to read you a garbled description of some action at sea. What's wrong with the following description of this naval action? A TBY took off from the Hornet and dropped 3-inch shells on a Japanese battleship. There may be more than one thing wrong with that. Mr. Kieran, will you start us off?
I don't think a PBY would take off from a battleship.
I didn't say it did.
Well, even from a carrier. Eminently correct.
Mr. Kieran, right, Mr. Baldwin?
Right.
The
PBY
Hornet.
PBY is a flying.
Yes, it's a seaplane. It wouldn't be based on the Hornet, which, as Mr. Kieran says, is an aircraft carrier. Now, how about the second part of the description of this engagement, Mr. Baldwin?
Wouldn't drop 3-inch shells.
Why not?
Drops bombs.
Drops bombs, and you couldn't drop those. Couldn't drop 3-inch shells from a plane.
Gosh, Pearl Harbor, remember?
No.
They did. It was supposed to be on Pearl Harbor. They were very similar to armor pieces.
That's the stuff, isn't it?
Well, it's been done once or twice. If you want to test a heavy belt of armor, it's fine.
Good thing to know. How about this one from Nell Doherty of Las Vegas, New Mexico? Here's one about weddings. Who officiated at the wedding of the following pairs? Who performed the wedding of the man all tattered and torn and the maiden all forlorn? Who performed?
So far, I haven't gotten married.
Pardon?
With us, they haven't gotten married.
We got to get them married. We only have a few minutes. Mr. Adams?
The minister, I forget what his description was.
That's the trouble. You see, now, if you only knew what the description was, you'd be all right. The priest, all shaven and shorn. All shaven and shorn, yes. The priest, all shaven and shorn. What's it from? What are the words from, Mr. Adams?
This is the house of Jack.
That's it, yes. Some other good. How about...
A good deal of Jack.
How about the wedding of Romeo and Juliet? Who officiated? Mr. Curran.
Why, the friar.
That was the name. Had a name.
Friar Lawrence.
Had a boy, Mr. LeBant. That's exactly right.
You know I'm a Shakespeare expert.
From now on, you are. If we can only stick to that question, week in and week out, Mr. LeBant, you're going to come through.
Well, that's in Tchaikovsky. That's why I know.
Is it in
Well, Romeo and Juliet.
Is there a Friar Lawrence in it?
Well, there's some awfully turbulent music. Or peaceful music, I'm sorry.
And that's for Friar Lawrence. How about the wedding of Abe Levy and Rosemary Murphy, who did the officiating then, Mr. LeBant?
Rose Nichols' play, Abe's Irish Rose.
That's the one who tied the nuptial knot.
Paramount. They bought it for a lot of money. either a rabbi or... I think both a rabbi and a minister.
Both rabbi and minister? And what else?
Priest.
Yes. All three faiths were represented. First, they were married by a Methodist and by Jewish and Catholic clergymen. It must have been a marriage.
The marriage didn't last.
It didn't last at all, really.
Too many, 5 years.
Lucky Strike Green has gone to war.
Now that master of brevity, Mr. Cross, demonstrates how to sum up 25 years in just 5 words.
Well, ladies and gentlemen, in a very true sense, the 25-year history of Lucky Strike can be summed up in these 5 words. Lucky Strike means fine tobacco. For year in, year out, the same story comes out of tobacco land. At the auctions down there, in market after market, we consistently select the riper, the lighter, the naturally milder Lucky Strike leaf. And smokers, because we do select and buy this better quality tobacco, you are assured a milder, better-tasting cigarette in Lucky's. Yes, make no mistake, in a cigarette, it's the tobacco that counts. Better tobacco means a better cigarette. So it's no wonder that with independent experts, auctioneers, buyers, and warehousemen, with men who know tobacco best, it's Lucky's 2-to-1. Mr. Fadiman, have I summed up the good common sense reasons for choosing a cigarette of fine tobacco, Lucky Strike, so round, so firm, so fully packed, so free and easy on the draw?
Mr. Cross, as usual, you have packed a great deal of sense into very few words. I timed you at 60 seconds.
Lucky Strike Green has gone to war.
Mr. Rysdale, I don't know what Lucky Strike Green is, but this time you must have a battalion established. How about this one from M. Hamilton Whitman of the U.S. Naval Reserve at Norfolk, Virginia? Now, gentlemen, we're going to act out some friendly scenes at sea. You are to imagine me on board a Navy vessel. A small Navy boat approaches alongside, and from the exchange of greetings that you are now going to hear, tell us who is approaching on the small boat. Is that clear? All right, here we go.
Ship ahoy!
United States!
Who's coming up alongside? Sure.
Take a chance that President Franklin D. Roosevelt.
Yes, that would be quite right. President of the United States is aboard the small boat. Would that be the only possible way of identifying that? That
no,
it would
be fine. It's President's flag.
Ahoy!
North Carolina!
Would be the captain of North Carolina.
Yes, so the commanding officer, if the captain happened to have just had a stomach ache or something at the time, or whoever is in command of the vessel. All right, here's the third and last.
Ship ahoy!
Aye, aye!
An officer.
Any officer?
Any officer.
Any commissioned officer other than the commanding officer. That's exactly right, Mr. Baldwin. You gave us 2 out of those 3. And how about this one from William Herman of Indianapolis? In what work of literature or the theater does someone forget the following things? Forget a password. This might be in a story of any sort. It's hearing.
In Grimm's Fairy Tale, Rumpelstiltskin, I believe.
Well, isn't it Rumpelstiltskin who remembers the password?
Is that a kid's story? Like one of those talking guns?
Oh, Open Sesame.
Yeah, what's that from?
Either Penrod or the thing that...
I don't know the Penrod.
No, the other one. You know, Tom Sawyer, Huckleberry, and all that stuff.
I don't remember it in there either.
I'm still thinking of Grimm's Fairy Tale,
I believe. Well, no, I don't remember. The one I was thinking of was the story... Pardon?
17.
Run the number up and you'll have it, Mr. Baldwin.
43.
40. Make it 40, yeah. 40. Yeah, who forgets the password in
We did.
In that story.
Alibaba. Alibaba.
No, it isn't Alibaba. It's his villainous brother, Captain. Alibaba is the one who remembers it, but it's his brother who forgets the word when he wants to leave the cave and seems to think he's imprisoned in the cave. I think we're kind of ragged on that one. Let's call that wrong. Now, at what work does someone forget a fan?
Oh.
Mr. Levant?
No, I'm glad I checked my mind.
Yes, I saw what was running through it. It was terrible. Mr. Adams?
Probably Lady Windermere.
Now you're talking.
Lady Windermere's fan by Oscar Wilde.
That's right. And I won't tell you to tell the story because I'm sure you will.
I don't know. I just know the title.
The losing of the forgetting of the fan is one of the major episodes in that play by Oscar Wilde, Lady Windermere's fan. Now, how about someone who forgot a song that he had plagiarized? Someone who forgot a song he had plagiarized, Mr. Levant.
Is that the Meister singer?
It is indeed. Who's the fellow who forgets it?
Beckmesser.
Beckmesser, that's right. What'd he do?
He copped Waldemar von Stolzing's cry song. And then,
why didn't you forget it?
I just have.
That's exactly right, though, Mr. Levant, and that gives us 2 out of 3. How about this one from Viola Cates of New York City? What engagements of this war are described in these famous accounts? I'm now going to quote them. We're going to have 3. We have to get 2 out of... Quote. We saw the rest in dot-dash code who we were. We answered all right with 2 torpedoes. What engagements being described?
Sounds like the Battle of Cape Matapan.
Where was that?
That was off Crete between the British and Italian fleets.
Well, it may be that the same thing happened way over there, but the one I'm thinking of happened several thousand miles away.
Probably talking about the Solomon Islands.
No, I'm not.
I don't think that happened in the Solomon
Islands. No. Think it did happen in the Solomon
Islands? I don't think it did.
Neither do I.
Cape Matapan, I know there's such a current city there.
In which the cruiser was not 500 yards away?
Yeah, the British came up on the Italians after dark, and the Italians asked who was there, and the British let loose with the broadside. That was the next thing. British destroyers torpedoed the Italian ships. That was Cape Matapan. Let's see what other occurrence it might be.
Well, the only other one that it might be is the one I have here on my card, and I'm going to stick to that. And that was the famous action in Subic Bay. And the story is told in William L. White's marvelous book, They Were Expendable. It's one of the exploits that Lieutenant Bulkley talks about. Now, you may be quite right, Mr. Baldwin. My information gives me Subic Bay. However, we may get the next 2 right. How about this one? She continued making uncontrollable circles in the sea. In which condition? I have several hands at once. I think I'm going to finish the sentence anyway. In which condition she was attacked by our flotillas with 2 more torpedoes, which brought her virtually to a standstill. Mr. Kieran?
Well, that was the final sinking of the Bismarck.
That's right. Where'd that take place?
That took place west of the French coast, I believe.
Somewhere in the North Atlantic.
Yes.
Yes, and when did it take place? About when? Mr. Baldwin?
May 1941.
That's right. That's exactly right, in May 1941. Now, here is the 3rd and final engagement. We crossed their T. The enemy turned in utter confusion, each ship taking its own course and trying to bring the action parallel and uncross the disastrous T. Mr. Baldwin?
That was the last scrap in the Solomon Islands when I think Captain Scott, I believe it was, commanding a cruiser and destroyer force of ours, intercepted some Japanese cruisers which were covering the landing at night.
Captain Small, I think the name was. Do you remember what the losses of the enemy amounted to in that engagement?
Well, I don't quite know. There have been various claims about it, but I think we probably sank 2 cruisers and at least 2 or 4 destroyers.
Yes, I have here 3 Jap cruisers. We're optimists on this program. And 5 destroyers. Is it the Savo Island action?
There was another previous Savo Island action, of course, in which we lost a number of cruisers.
Yes. Well, that gives us at least 2 out of... And here's one from Carolyn Schroeds of Stockton. Did the following characters support? The first is Batsarov. Batsarov. Mr. Levant.
Nihilism. He was the first nihilist.
What is a nihilist, Mr. Levant?
It's the first... It appears in Turgenev's Father and Son, a wonderful book, in the 1850s in Russia.
Okay.
It was the first... Nihilism is against any kind of government.
Yes, it's a man who believes in...
Which would do away with you on this show.
I'm thinking that you're right. Where would that leave you, Mr. Levant?
Well, do away with me first.
That's a complete description of nihilism. Now, how about this one? This character is named Berzelius Windrip. What school of thought did he, Mr. Adams?
He was a dictator in Can't Happen Here.
That's right. And his school of thought would be what? If you want to call it a school of thought.
Hitlerism.
Fascism?
Yes, fascism. Let's call it fascism. Now, how about Oliver Wiswell? Oliver Wiswell, what school of thought did he represent, Mr. Levant?
Well, I was in the Revolution, the American Revolution. That right. Represented the, well, I don't want to alienate England's affection for us now. Let somebody else do it.
Oh.
Tory.
He was a Tory, yes. One of a large party of Americans in those days who simply weren't on the side of the revolutionaries. They just took the losing side. That often happens. He is the hero in Kenneth Roberts' book, Oliver Wiswell. How about this one from Dr. John Kenya of New York City? It's a sports question. And all these expressions that I'm going to use have the same frigid quality to them. Where in sports are these expressions encountered? The first is to ice, Mr. Kieran.
Encountered in ice hockey. It's a form of delaying the game when you're ahead or when you have your men short on ice.
What do you do?
You shoot the puck, slide the puck down to the other end of the rink.
Yes, that's right. How about to freeze? To freeze, Mr. Levant?
That's basketball.
Basketball.
You have a short lead when the game is approaching the end, and you don't want the enemy to get the ball. You just pass the ball in a short area between among each other. What is it, between among?
Well, it depends how many there are.
Five.
I guess it's among. Is that right, Mr. Chair?
That's right.
Well, the way I play would be between me and somebody else.
And finally, this chilly expression, to cool off. Used in what sport means what? To cool off.
Cool off?
Cool off, yeah.
You can cool off a fellow in any sport, but they cool out a horse after racing.
You can knock a guy out and say he's cool.
You can. Mm-hmm. I was thinking of the way it's used in baseball. It has a definite meaning. Mr. Baldwin, what does it mean in baseball? You had your hand
up. Game, doesn't it? Take a rest.
I never heard of it.
Well, it might mean that. No, it means letting the hitter wait between pitches. Isn't that right? You sort of get him off guard by waiting on the pitch until he sort of lost. He isn't all set anymore. Mr. Adams, remember?
Never heard the expression.
Rather precious. I never heard it.
Are you crying me down? Well, we got two out of three anyway.
Lucky Strike Green has gone to war.
And now before we go on to the next question, Mr. Rysdale points out that 2-1, as Lucky Strike uses it, is a great deal more than a figure of speech.
Yes, indeed, ladies and gentlemen. The 2-1 preference for Lucky Strike among independent tobacco experts is established by actual sworn records. These records show that among independent experts, auctioneers, buyers, and warehousemen, Lucky Strike has twice as many exclusive smokers as have all other cigarettes combined. So you see, there's good solid fact behind that well-known phrase. With men who know tobacco best, it's Lucky's 2-1. And smokers, surely the example of these experts is well worth your following. For at the auctions they attend, they obviously see just who buys what tobacco. Yes, year after year, they see the makers of Lucky's consistently select the riper, lighter, milder Lucky Strike leaf. Smokers remember, in a cigarette, it's the tobacco that counts. And the smoke tobacco experts smoke, Lucky Strike means fine tobacco. So round, so firm, so fully packed, so free and easy on the draw.
Thank you, Mr. Rysdale. That took 60 seconds.
Lucky Strike Green has gone to war.
Yes, smokers, Lucky Strike gone to war.
I don't know what these boys are talking about, but it seems to me that Lucky Strike Green has gone to war. Here's one from J. Vance Wyckoff of Jackson Heights, New York. Gentlemen, what are these firsts in literature? These are quotations in which the word first appears in every case. I think we ought to get 3 out of 3 on this. First class fighting man. Mr. Baldwin?
Gunga Din. Kipling?
Is that right?
That isn't right. It's Kipling, but it's not Gunga Din.
It isn't, that's right. Mr. Adams?
Fuzzy Wuzzy,
yes. I sort of feel I ought to give you credit on that, Mr. Baldwin. That's not bad for a military expert. Where did Fuzzy Wuzzy live?
India.
Oh, home in the Sudan.
Sudan.
You got the wrong, practically the wrong continent.
Wrong continent.
Yeah. How about this one? This is another first. Nothing first.
What?
I know you don't believe it, Mr. Levant. Mr. Akira?
All at once and nothing first, just as bubbles do when they burst.
That's picking it out of the hat.
On the 1st November 1855, I believe.
1st of November, Earthquake Day.
What are we talking about?
The wonderful one-horse shay.
Yes, I don't know. You have to explain that to me. Yes. I think that's pretty good, because that's not a very well-known quotation. Who wrote the Deacon's Mass?
Oliver Wendell Holmes.
Very good. Sure. Now, how about another first? How first he met her. How first he met her. Mr. Adams.
She was cutting bread and butter.
That's right. Who is this that you're talking about?
Werther.
That's right.
Right. And what are you quoting from?
Charlotte had a love for water, which something could never utter. When
would you know how first he met her?
He was cutting bread and butter.
Very good. And now this one from Hardin Goldstein of New York. Under what circumstances did these people disappear? The first is Ambrose Bierce. Mr. Levant.
He just disappeared. We still don't know. It was in Mexico.
In Mexico. When was it?
He was a good friend of Dashiell Hammett.
Really?
Not who hasn't disappeared.
I didn't know that Mr. Hammett was quite as old as that.
Either when? That or Hammett admired him.
I think it's that, yes. They're a different generation. When did Bierce disappear into Mexico?
I don't know.
Early 1900s.
1913. And who was Bierce?
He was a writer of peculiar stories with a chill in them.
That's right.
Personnel Creek Bridge.
Yes, that was a very good one. How about this one?
San Francisco.
Under what circumstances did Rudolph Diesel disappear? Rudolph Diesel.
He died in 1913, too.
Levant is a bear on disappearances.
Well, I happened to pick up D in the encyclopedia last week, and I ran across Diesel.
And disappearances, too, I
suppose. He died.
Yeah, he died.
He invented the machine.
Yes, Diesel engine. Now, under what circumstances did he die or disappear or whatever?
Well, I stopped mourning about him. That was 1913.
1913, yes. You haven't got a very large heart.
Well, you furnish the rest.
He was crossing the channel on his way to consult the British Admiralty, and he fell overboard and was drowned. How about Theodosia Burr? Theodosia Burr. Who is Theodosia Burr?
She's the daughter of Aaron Burr.
That's the daughter of Aaron Burr. Know anything about her disappearance?
No, I don't.
Ooh, Mr. Kieran. In 1812, she sailed from Charleston in a boat for New York, and the vessel was never heard from. It's presumed it was sunk. Well, that sends a $50 bond to Mr. Goldstein.
Lucky Strike Green has gone to war.
Well, that's all we have time for. Thank you, Mr. Baldwin, for joining us this evening. In a few seconds, I'll announce next week's guest. Tonight, Lucky Strike has paid out one set of the Encyclopedia Britannica and one $50 war bond. And speaking of bonds, listen to this. In that part of Russia, at present enslaved to Germany, the Russian slave children are now being taught a new kind of geography. Their German masters divide the world into two parts, lands belonging to Germany and lands that will belong to Germany, including what the German teachers call harmful America. Would you like your children to be taught that kind of geography? Do you see why we should buy war bonds regularly? Next week, Mr. Kieran and Mr. Adams will be on hand, and we shall have two guests. One is the nationally famous wit and poet, Dorothy Parker, and the other, famous both as poet and anthologist, Mr. Louis Untermeyer, editor of A Treasury of Great Poems. Send letters with questions and the correct answers to Information, Please, at 480 Lexington Avenue, New York City. And now a parting message from Mr. L.A. Speed Riggs, famous tobacco auctioneer from Goldsboro, North Carolina.
Hey, 45, 45, 45, 45, 45, 45, 45, 45, 45, 45, 45, 45, 45, 45, 45, 45, 45, 45, 45, 45, 45, 45, 45, 45, 45, 45, 45, 45, 45, 45, 45, 45, 45, 45, 45, 45, 45, 45, 45, 45, 45, 45, 45, 45, 45, 45, 45, 45, 45, 45, 45, 45, 45, 45, 45, 45, 45, 45, 45, 45, 45, 45, 45, 45, 45, 45, 45, 45, 45, 45, 45, 45, 45, 45, 45, 45, 45, 45, 45, 45, 45, 45, 45, 45, 45, 45, 45, 45, 45, 45, 45, 45, 45, 45, 45, 45, 45, 45, 45, 45, 45, 45, 45, 45, 45, 45, 45, 45, 45, 45, 45, 45, 45, 45, 45, 45, 45, 45, 45, 45, 45, 45, 45, 45, 45, 45, 45, 45,